I can hear you guys.
Perfect. I think we'll only have the two co-chairs in the room, so.
Okay. Awesome. Are they there now?
No, not yet. I know one of them at least is in the building, but they're not down here yet. So. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, Vanessa, if you can just message me too when it's about to start so I can turn on the red light.
Sure. Yep. I'll message both of you.
Awesome.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. And Nate, I'm just going to mute myself here.
Okay.
Are you going to mute me as well?
Yes. Let's see. The only reason
well,
you would...
Obviously, if there, the only reason to put me back on is if there was a roll call vote, and I highly doubt that's happening.
Right. But just in case. Yep. Okay. Sounds
okay.
good.
Thanks.
Okay. Have a good meeting.
You okay. You too. Bye.
Your line is muted.
I call this meeting the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 10:02 a.m. on Wednesday, June 10th, 2020. Present today is myself, Co-Chair Johnston, Representative Foster, Representative Sullivan Letter, Representative Dozen, Representative Ortiz, Representative Merrick, Representative Carpenter, Representative Tilton. We're also joined by Speaker Edgman, and we have our presenters, Alan Weitzner and Sandra Moeller from the Department of Commerce. And Representative Wohl just signed on. Today, the committee will hear a presentation from the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development on the disbursement of Federal CARES Act funding to communities and small business. Just as a reminder, I would ask that everyone to make sure their phones are on mute so we do not have background noise. We'll let the presenters get through their presentation, and then we'll take questions once they are done. From the department, we have, I'm just seeing if the commissioner's on. I do not see the Commissioner Julie Anderson on yet, but
yes,
are you
I'm
on,
here.
Commissioner? Okay. Thank
yes.
you, Commissioner Julie Anderson. Sandra Moeller, Director of the Division of Community and Regional Affairs, and we are joined by Alan Weitzner, Interim Executive Director for the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority. Commissioner Anderson, if you would like to put yourself on the record and start your presentation, and feel free to call on others as necessary.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, this is Representative Laban. I am online.
Thank you. Record that Representative LeBond is online also.
Okay.
Commissioner Anderson.
Madam Chair, thank you very much and good morning. For the record, my name is Julie Anderson, Commissioner of the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. I'm joined by ADA's Interim Executive Director, Alan Weitzner, and the Division of Community and Regional Affairs Director, Sandra Moeller. Thank you to the House Finance Committee for inviting us to testify today on the Alaska CARES Grant Program for small Alaskan businesses and on the community distribution payment. Sandra Moeller will take over at this point and review the status of the community distribution payment. Thank you. Sandra?
Yes, good morning. This is Sandra Moeller, the Director of the Division of Community Regional Affairs. I thank you for the opportunity to present the work that our department has been doing to assist Alaskans through this pandemic. The community assistance payments were made possible by the Direct Municipal Relief, RPL, approved by the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee on May 11th. The RPLs were ratified by the legislature upon the passage of HB 313, which was signed into law by the governor on May 22nd. The RPLs provide for mitigation and recovery efforts based on the population as distributed through the community assistance payments and the direct cost allocation. Community assistance payments amount is $257,548,000 and a direct cost allocation amount of $322,024,000 for a total of $568,573,000. There were 228 eligible municipalities listed. Each eligible municipality was sent a grant agreement, a monthly report form, sample authorizing resolution, and the federal guidance and federal FAQs. The first completed grants were received and payments made on May 22nd. DCRA also has a resource desk that has been fielding a number of questions revolving around eligible expenses. We have also participated in a weekly standing call with OMB, Division of Finance, and Alaska Municipal League to discuss any questions that communities have that don't have answers in the guidance. The total community disbursements are available in three tranches, with the first being approximately 60%, the second 20%, and the third 20% of the total amount allocated. In order to be eligible for the second and third payments, the community must demonstrate they have expended 80% or more of the previous payment. The next slide, this chart shows the progression of community distribution payments between May 22nd and June 9th. As you can see, we have received a handful of signed grant agreements and authorizing resolutions each day. Once DCRA receives and approves a signed grant agreement and authorizing resolution, they give the green light to Department of Administration's Division of Finance to deploy the funds. As of yesterday, 72 communities have received their first community distribution payment. Between the 72 communities, over $107 million has been distributed to the communities so far. For specifics on which communities have received funding, on how much funding they've received, please visit our DCRA's COVID-19 information webpage. We'll have the URL on the next couple of slides. This amount represents about 32% of the eligible communities have applied for the first tranche, and 30% of the first payment amount has been disbursed. We continue to get completed grant approvals daily and have been submitting them for payment the same day. This morning, we received an additional five, so we're getting about five a day. The next slide shows the disbursement across the state of the communities that have received CARES Act funds, as this is as of yesterday. The next slide, five, is DCRA began working with local governments on April 21st to ensure that they were prepared to accept the payments. In order for the payments to be deployed, the local governments required a return signed agreement and authorized resolution. And those packages were sent out via email to all the communities on May 15th. Grant agreement packages included the grant agreements, again, the monthly reporting form, the federal guidance, federal FAQs, and sample authorizing resolutions. So on May 22nd, our first round of payments went out to nine communities that had returned their grant agreements. Those communities include ADAC, Chenega, Chivac, Chignik, Cordova, Fairbanks, Puslia, Selowik, and White Mountain. We then issued a press release to announce the first round of payments and the process necessary to release funds on May 22nd. On June 1st, DCRA published our first running tally of community distribution payments on our website, as was mentioned previously. The running tally will list the total funds distributed, total number of communities that have received payments so far, specific communities have received funds so far, and the amount of funds received. As I mentioned a couple slides back, 70 communities have received over $107 million as of yesterday. I'll now hand the presentation back to Commissioner Anderson and Director Weitzner to talk about the AK CARES program.
Okay, and thank you. This probably would be a good chance to see if anybody has any questions for you. Are there any members that have questions for the director? And also, I'd like to say that Representative Knopf has joined us also. Are there any members for questions?
Yeah, I'll try one, Madam Chair. It's Andy Josephs.
Representative Josephson?
Thank you, through the chair, or the director. My question is about the department's current understanding of use of the community assistance funds. So I think it's pretty clear that if a government needed to employ or rededicate someone to work on COVID-related matters, that would be reimbursed to them. What is the department's view, however, if they wanted to go to the next level and provide daycare assistance or provide grants to their local university campus because of COVID losses? That's a subject I've taken up with Ms. Pitney, our fiscal analyst. Where is the department's belief about how far beyond those direct costs a municipality can go?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I have not encountered that question specifically. We are referring grantees to the federal guidance, and we do have a standing weekly meeting with the OMB director, Director Fowler with Admin Services, as well as the Municipal League, to try to address those questions. So without knowing the specifics of that, it would be hard for me to answer that. but we are trying to be, provide guidance and flexibility to communities. But I don't think I can answer that with just that information. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other additional questions? I have one question. So what is the relationship between the department and AML? Is it mainly just partners? Is it a job of Black Municipal League, or are they being contracted with?
To the chair, we do not have a contract with AML. Over the years, we have had a very close partnership with AML as they serve a subset of the communities that we serve. So they have been very helpful with responding to questions, gathering common questions from different municipalities, and have been holding their own town hall type meetings with their members and others. That's been open. So they're basically a partner for the department.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Thank you.
Madam Chair, this is Representative Ortiz. I have a question.
Oh, Representative Ortiz.
Thank you. Through the chair, Commissioner Anderson, I went to the link which lists the communities where there have been funds distributed already. How updated is that particular site? Is it updated daily? Is it so what I'm looking at, is it the most current information based on a day ago or how long ago?
Through the chair to Representative Ortiz, again, this is Sandra Moeller, Director of DCRA. The link is updated. We try to update it at least twice a week. We are getting a number of applicants, like I said, every 5 days. So the five I got this morning in our processing will not show up on that link. But I would say that it is updated every 2 to 3 days whenever we get new information and we have staff available to update that data.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, but I have one additional question. Is there a timeline as far as for the communities to get their grant application in?
To the chair, no, there is not a deadline. We are, again, we sent out the application, we're surprised to find out, within a few days, the community started returning the grants, and I believe that's because we had started prepping them and saying this is coming. We are starting next week with, it's a continual process, but next week we are doing a specific, for the communities we have not heard back from, a specific outreach to them to ensure that they are aware of it, if there's any questions they have, and if they need assistance in applying for the grant.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And could you just, for the record, identify yourself?
I'm sorry, that's Sandra Moeller, Director, Division of Community and Regional Affairs.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you for participating.
Mm-hmm.
Our next presenter.
Yes, Madam Chair, we'll hand this over to Commissioner Anderson.
Thank you.
And good morning again. For the record, this is Julie Anderson, Commissioner of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. The Small Business Relief Grant Program was developed through the RPL process in early May, and the intent was to provide funds to those small businesses that were not able to access any CARES Act funds through the SBA. The Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority worked with our department to provide program guidelines and prepare the RPL that was presented to the LBNA committee. The program provides funds for operating expenses incurred between March 11th and 8 weeks after the date of application. This grant program, which is being administered through ADA, is being managed. The application and payment process is being managed by a third party, which was contracted through ADA, and that third party is currently Credit Union One for the first tranche of funding. Following following the development of the RPL and in discussions with some of the members of the LBNA committee, our department and ADA became aware that the SBA programs were more restrictive and businesses were not receiving the funds that they had requested or needed. The department is currently working with the Department of Law to determine how much flexibility we have while still complying with legislative intent and the confines of the law while addressing some of these gaps that still remain between the SBA recipients and the Alaska CARES grant program. Additionally, the department provided funding for the Alaska Regional Development Organization, $750,000, to provide technical assistance to regional businesses in applying for these and other federal funds. We are also working with the Small Business Development Center, who is providing technical assistance to those communities that are not represented by an auditor. At this point, I'll turn it over to the ADA Executive Director, Alan Weissner, who will discuss the specifics of the Alaska CARES program. Alan?
Thank you. Madam Chairman, this is Alan Weissner. I'm the Interim Executive Director for ADA. The slide that I'm on right now is Alaska CARES program, which is giving a summary of the program as it was launched on June 1st. The program itself was structured to address the lack of access by Alaska small businesses to principally the SBA loan forgiveness programs, as the commissioner had highlighted. What I would like to define is the target businesses that we were trying to approach with this structure, with this program in place. With census data and information coming from the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, really looking at statistics as of 2019, there were between 14,431 and 15,572 businesses, private sector businesses, that were licensed in Alaska with less than 50 employees. Of that number, approximately 4,408 businesses are located in rural communities. So the program that we're looking to address was directed principally to these businesses that have 50 or less full-time, as we define full-time equivalent employees, given Alaska's seasonal businesses, and also addressing an allocation for rural communities. The program itself established a up to 20% reserve and maintains that 20% reserve for rural community access, which is defined to be populations of 5,000 or less. We also have included 501c3 and 501c19 nonprofit organizations based upon terms that were also incorporated into the SBA PPP program. And with the number of those Alaskan nonprofits that fall under 501c3 are 4,290 nonprofit organizations, and under 501c19 are 89 nonprofit organizations. Going to the next slide, we're looking at the information that has been provided as of the project or the program launch on June 1st through the first week of activity. And as Commissioner Anderson had highlighted, we allocated an initial launch to Credit Union One of $150 million for the AK CARES program as it has been defined. So to that time period, within the first week, we have received approximately 1,200 applications amounting to approximately $51 million worth of grant funding. The average amount that is being requested is at $43,382. And what I would highlight is that the range on the average is as we had anticipated based upon our public outreach and discussion with different businesses that fell within that sector, that the need that they were requiring was between $30,000 to $50,000. And in sizing the program, looking at a need to reach approximately 5,000 to 7,000 businesses, we defined the program total program size to be approaching the $290 million that was allocated for AK CARES to DCCED. Rural communities amongst those applications, what I'd like to highlight, we have received applications from over 69 rural communities throughout the state of Alaska. On ADA's website, we provide a map that is defining the grant applications that we've received from the different communities. I would ask the committee members to look at that map when they have an opportunity, and we will be updating that on a daily basis as information is being received. But what it does reflect is that we are reaching the full communities across Alaska, as we had anticipated. Overall, on a rural level, based upon information as of today, over 34% of the applications are coming in from rural communities. We do have a designation of approximately, it states on the slide, 273, but that can be updated to 303 applications that have an unknown designation. That is largely relying upon the fact that the zip codes have not been filled out in the applications, or there is an incorrect zip code that will be finalized once the application is actually in the program operator system. So that unknown designation will be fully known and be able to be reported to the committee. Going to the next slide. Through the first week of June 5th, 44 of those applications have been approved, amounting to $1.5 million. Of those, underlining, 11 have been funded. The process that we've seen so far within the first week has been a little bit different from the applicant behavior that we had originally anticipated. What is occurring, and what I'd like to explain behind those numbers, is that the program operator is receiving a substantially higher level of paperwork and information from the applicants than we had originally anticipated or had established for the program. And we believe that this is linked to the fact that these parties are more familiar with the SBA PPP process, which is a loan process and requires a larger amount of paperwork. So the program operator is actually having to interact with the applicant 6-7 more times than we had anticipated, and ultimately resolving the full application and getting that process through to the point of approval and then being able to fund. So what we anticipate is that with the first week has had a slower than anticipated start, but we should see a larger amount of fundings occurring this week and the following weeks as this queue is being processed. The issues that I would highlight is that once a application is approved, the funding would occur within actually one day. So that is happening very quickly. But with the applications that are coming through, each one of them is needing some additional attention to it. Eligible expenses that are being requested by the applicants are in some cases higher than the grant amount, so that needs to be rationalized to the total grant amount that can be awarded. There's a lot of questions that are being related to how those expenses relate to COVID-19 emergency expenses. We're having to verify quite a bit amount of the information that's being provided by the applicants, which is one of the controls that we established in the program to ensure that funding is being directly applied to meet these eligible expenses. And in some cases, the applicants are delaying in the responses for that information, which is leading to a delay ultimately in approval. But again, we anticipate overall that the program itself will quicken in the way that the queue is being processed and applicant funding will be occurring much more frequently. I do want to point out that the program operator, Credit Union 1 staff, is not automatically denying any of these applications that have not been fulfilled or filled out correctly. They're actually working with each one of these applicants directly to make sure that they're followed through in the process. And one of the things that we've undertaken at this time to improve the process is establishing updated FAQ sheets on our website, DCCD's website, Credit Union One's website. Credit Union One has created a video which is walking through applicants on the process, the application process, which is, I might need to highlight, much simpler than the SBA P3 and the paperwork being much simpler. So as applicants are providing new information, they are also then being directed to the video and any questions that they have to identify just what type of information is needed to be filled out by the applicants and then processed. We are also trying to identify simpler requirements for the people's experience so we can put that information as well on the website. We're participating in town halls with Credit Union One to explain that process. And we're also engaging the ARTRs, as has been discussed previously, in the outreach to the communities to also explain that process. So we anticipate that this will quicken how grants are being actually released and funded to the small businesses. Within the next slide, of identifying with the target businesses, how the current breakdown has been, and this data is only through June 4th or Thursday of last week, and we can also provide this updated information. But we are targeting the smaller businesses that were not able to access P3 funding or EIDL funding at the time that we created the program. And I believe what we're identifying, the fact is that we are reaching those particular small businesses within Alaska that were underserved by those programs. Overall, in the breakdown of the information that we had in creating the program, the data showed that companies with private sector businesses with a monthly average employee base of 1 to 4 were actually about 9,000 businesses within Alaska. Monthly average between 5 to 9 employees was 3,333. And the monthly average of between 10 to 49 was 3,213. We did anticipate in establishing the program that the larger companies, meaning the having employee bases between 10 to 49, would actually have a better access to SBA P3 programs and usability of those programs, and so would be a lesser component of the AK CARES funding. With outreach efforts, we initiated the websites on May 15th. And this slide goes through the initial prep work and getting the information out to the public and the community on the AK CARES program. What I would like to identify principally now is how we're updating that information. Credit Union One, ADA, DCCD are actively participating in town halls. In fact, we have a town hall that's scheduled subsequent to this committee meeting to update parties in the Southeast area. We're trying to identify more communication efforts and identifying a journalist to describe the program, to communicate the process. We're also linking the video that I was referring to before for communities and the ARTRs to provide that to the rural communities. So there's more information, more definition ultimately to the program itself and the processes that we have in place. At this point in time, I'll hand it back to Sandra for the discussion of the ARTR participation. Thank you.
This might be a good break to, if you don't mind, to answer some questions. And Representative LeBond has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks for the presentation, Mr. Reitzner. I guess I have a multiple-part question, and it begins with the ADA board meeting on May 20th, when a decision was made to allow 501c6 organizations to be eligible for CARES grant support. Decision, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, was also made to allow for small businesses that received small PPP loan amounts, say under $5,000, or the economic disaster relief monies of, I believe the peak on that program was $10,000. Specifically, I have a small business in my district that received a $1,000 economic disaster grant from SBA. Is that business eligible to apply for the state grant through the Alaska or through the CARES Act, or is that business ineligible? And has any progress been made on finding a way to bring the 501c6 organizations into eligibility? And I know that's a long question, multiple parts. Thank you.
This is Alan Weissner through the chair, Representative LeBond. The ADA board had full discussion on those elements for the program. What we found out afterwards on the discussion was that the House Bill 313, enacting the RPL into law, provided a different view on how we could incorporate or change the program. And I would ask Commissioner Anderson to give some feedback on the what is currently being reviewed on the program.
Through the chair, this is, for the record, Julie Anderson, Commissioner of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. Representative LeBond, yes, that we did have quite a lengthy discussion at the ADA board about how we could improve the flexibility of this program, not understanding that we were restricted to the verbiage in the RPL. As I indicated earlier, we are working with the Department of Law to determine what kind of flexibility we have within the RPL through the review of legislative intent and understanding what we can do within the confines of the law and still provide some program flexibility. As I indicated earlier, it was apparent after we went through the development of the RPL that there was this big gap, such as one of your constituents is experiencing, and we are looking for ways to address that in a manner that's consistent with law, but and then also meets those needs.
A follow-up, Madam Chair.
Follow-up?
Yes, specifically, I appreciate the effort to find some flexibility for the 501c6 organizations. Specifically, what is your position on a small business that received a modest PPP loan or an economic disaster grant from the SBA program and their eligibility for the Alaska small business grant program that you're now administering? Would you accept an application from a small business that received a $1,000 grant through the SBA, for example?
Through the chair, Representative LeBond, that is one of the things that we are looking at now, understanding that there is that gap. We're looking at clarification on the verbiage, having received SBA funds, either the 3P or the EIDL or other federal funds. We're looking for some clarification and intent on that area. As it stands now, we are sticking to the language that in the RPL, but this is one of the areas we're looking for clarification on to be able to expand that flexibility. Thank you.
And one final comment, and then I'll get off. If a small business that received a $1,000 economic disaster grant from the SBA returned the money to the bank and to SBA, would that then make them eligible to apply for the state grant?
Through the chair, Representative LeBond, that is one of those gray areas that we're reviewing with the Department of Law. Because as it states in the RPL, it's that has access to or received, that language is being a bit confining. So we're looking to see how much flexibility we have in that area as well. I'm hoping that we, you know, we're working through this diligently, and I know there's a lot of small businesses that are definitely in need, not having been able to secure what they expected from the federal program. So we're working quickly, and hopefully we'll have an answer soon.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Wall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess my first question is, as usual, been asked by Representative LeBond on the PPP ineligibility clause in the ADA loans, and I, too, had a constituent reach out who received, actually was approved for $1,000 from PPP and asked that same question. If he rejected that money, would he be eligible for the Alaska CARES money? And the answer we got was no, he was not eligible. So maybe there's some change in the RPL that can happen in the near future, perhaps by LBNA, and I don't know if that's being looked into. Is that one of the avenues being looked into? Can anyone answer that question?
Through the chair, this is Julie Anderson, Representative Wolf. That what we are looking at is how flexible we can be within the interpretation of the RPL and still be within the confines of the law, understanding that if we can rely on legislative intent and the need to have maximum flexibility for the department to administer this program, as we are currently in, as you know, a severe economic disaster situation, we're looking for the flexibility to be able to make these changes quickly. At this point in time, we're not considering opening up the RPL again, but that's something for further discussion.
Okay, thank you. I have a couple more questions, Madam Chair.
Follow-up?
Yeah, thank you. Let's see. It looks like from the charts and tables we've seen that you've received 1,100 loan applications for about $50 million, which is about one-sixth of the total fund of close to $300 million. So if the math gets extrapolated out, you could be looking at 6,000 applicants. So far, you've approved 44 and funded 11. At this rate, it looks like it's going to take a long time to get through the 6,000 potential applicants if they all average about $43,000 each. Is there any effort being pursued as to try to accelerate that process? Because it looks like even if approved is 44 out of 1,100, and I understand there were some complications at first, but is the one lending institution adequate to process this many applicants? And a lot of these are summer tourism businesses that have a time factor like any business that's under this kind of pressure. So I'm just wondering if this rate is disturbing to you, or if you're confident that you can disperse close to $300 million in a timely fashion.
Through the chair, Representative Wolf, this is Alan Weissner with ADA. We have amended the RFP that initially engaged Credit Union One to attract other program operators with the intent of speeding up this processing that's going on with the grants and getting funding to the Alaska small businesses. You are absolutely correct on the issue you're raising, and we believe that by providing or getting new program operators into the mix with us, we will be able to accelerate the funding. Thank you.
Follow-up? Yes, thank you. So I guess my follow-up would be, so you're looking at other lending institutions besides Credit Union One that could help alleviate the burden on that one institution. Is that correct?
Through the chair, this is Alan Weissner, Representative Wolf. That is correct. We have issued an amended RFP as of Wednesday last week, looking for return of that information bids by Friday. Again, trying to accelerate the process of engaging another party to be able to address this issue. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Let's see. I had one or two more questions, Madam Chair. AML is helping out.
We have a list of representatives that also have questions. So.
Okay. Well, I'll try to be quick. AML, are they they're assisting these communities? Are they being paid by the communities, or are they is this something that DCCED is helping out with? In other words, is AML contracted by the – what's AML's relationship to
– Through the chair, this is Commissioner Anderson, Representative Wolf. Sandra, in her previous presentation, had addressed this issue, stating that AML is taking this duty upon them as a partner with the department and providing services to their communities. They are not contracted with the department. I do not know whether they are receiving any payments, additional payments from the their communities. Perhaps Director Moeller can address that.
Yeah, through the chair, this is Sandra Moeller, Director of DCRA. Representative Wolf, I do not know also if the communities are paying them. I do know that AML has staffed an additional person within their organization to work with communities on the applying for grants, and I do not know where those funds came from. But again, we do not have a contractual relationship with AML.
Okay, thank you, and I'll pass it on to any further questions. I may have one more. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. I just have a follow-up as far as the RFP process. Are you looking for, again, a statewide response? In other words, a financial institution that is statewide, or is the RFP structured so it could be from community banks?
To the Chair, this is Alan Weissner. We have put the RFP out to the same group of financial institutions that we had originally reached out to on the original RFP, where the requirements within that amended RFP are for equal access, non-preferential access to a statewide application, or being able to achieve statewide applications. But we have also asked different institutions to come back to us if they have a very specific community that they can address, that we would put together, for lack of a better definition, a quilt of access. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question regarding slides 7 and 8. I think I caught the data, but I just want to clarify. Did you say, or did one of the presenters say, that there's somewhere around 15,000 small businesses, 50 or less employees, that's kind of your target audience? Is that a correct statement?
Through the Chair, this is Alan Weissner. That is correct. When we were originating the program and defining what our target was, and ultimately the requirement of 50 or less full-time equivalent employees, the information that we have from the Department of Labor and Workforce Development reflected that in the private sector, there are over 15,000 of these businesses. We also compared that to the number of businesses that have received SBA P3 funding, which was over 10,000. So we looked at the net number of 5,000 as being that target market. If there was on average a need between 30 to 50,000, that meant that we were in need of funding, ultimately to meet the needs of those businesses, of between $150 to $250 million. Thank you.
Next is Representative Leonard Sullivan. Sullivan Leonard, I mean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is such that, you know, as we look around the state and see the various nonprofits, I'm curious as to what the oversight is for some of the nonprofits that may be receiving federal funding that's not directly coming through the CARES Act, whether it's coming through a humanities or foundation group, an endowment as such. Are you tracking this? Just like to see kind of what we're seeing coming down the pike.
The application process for all businesses, which includes the nonprofits that are under the program, need to certify that they have not received any other forms of federal funding. And that's the principal form that we're tracking that on, is their certification. And ultimately then signing the application, which is certifying that everything is true and correct in the application itself. But there is no separate verification process that the program operator is undertaking to track that specific funding. Thank you.
Okay, great answer on that. And then follow-up, Madam Chair.
Follow-up.
And then with regard to assistance to the rural areas across the state, I recall in past practice under DCCED that the local government specialists were very active in assisting with grant applications and paperwork in order to receive funding through the state. Are we utilizing our local government specialists at this time?
Through the Chair, this is Alan Weissner. We have been working with the Arters Group specifically on the community access, And I believe that we are seeing with the at this stage in the first week with the number of rural applications that are coming through, again, that number currently is sitting at 34%, could be higher based upon once the unclear designation gets verified. But we are having the access we thought we would have from the rural community. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you, Madam Chair. That's it.
Thank you. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think I'm directing this question to, at least to start with, to Commissioner Anderson. And getting back to the question that was raised previously by Representative Wool around the community distribution payment section of the presentation, Representative Wool asked about AML's role in this process and whether or not they are have some sort of formal agreement with OMB or with the administration as being a conduit for some of these funds going out to these different communities. And it was testified that neither person said that they were familiar with any payments being made to AML by these communities. But it's come to my attention that at the Juneau Assembly meeting this last week, there was reference to $130,000 charged by AML to the community of Juneau. So I guess I'm still trying to get at the bottom of this overall idea of what is AML's role in this process, and are they operating with any kind of agreement with administration? And I guess I'm just looking for a little bit further clarification to that issue.
Through the chair, this is Commissioner Anderson. Representative Ortiz, this is the first I've heard of that. I'll have Director Moeller address the question about the formal MOU. My understanding is we do not have a formal MOU with them. They are providing this service as part of their services that they deliver to their member communities and working with other communities as well. And I would ask Director Moeller to respond further to that issue.
Yes, to the chair, Sandra Moeller, director of DCRA. We do not have a formal contract. We don't have an MOU. We have a longstanding relationship with AML because of our constituencies overlap. So I am not aware of the payment that was mentioned about from Juneau. But I can definitely follow up with their executive director at AML to see, find out further clarification of how they are getting compensated, if that's the wish. But we do not have, any MOU with AML.
And Madam Chair, this is Mr. Anderson again. I'd like to add on Representative Ortiz. Services that AML is providing is strictly any type of interpretation, technical services. We're not, I don't know if this is clear, but we're not actually funneling any payments through AML to any of the communities. Those are going directly from the state to the communities. And AML is just serving a similar role to what the ARDRs are doing with the Small Business Relief Fund, which is just answering questions and helping with process. I believe we are also our local government specialists within the Division of Community and Regional Affairs are also providing that technical expertise to the different communities. Thank you.
And Representative Ortiz, I'm not sure if that maybe was Juneau discussing their membership fees with AML. It might be something to look into. Do you have a follow-up, Representative Ortiz?
Yeah, I think I do. Thank you, Madam Chair, very much. So this raises some particular questions in relationship to, if some of those funds are CARES Act funds, whether that would be an appropriate use of CARES Act funds that may, again, I underscore may, this is just only reported to me, if that $130,000 that was, if that in fact was a payment made by the community of Juneau to AML, whether those monies came from CARES Act funds, that would be one question. And then I guess what I'm saying is that I would assume that it would be BCED's job and function in this process to work directly with communities at no cost in distributing these funds, these CARES Act funds. That would be my general understanding of what should be happening. So, in any case, I guess the whole thing merits some further investigation. So, thank you very much.
Representative Merrick.
Thank you. Through the chair, I'm curious, when looking at the applications for Alaska CARE Grant, what are the most common, specifically COVID-related expenses that businesses are applying for?
Through the chair, this is Alan Weissner with ADA. The most common expenses that we're seeing that's coming through is related to rent, mortgage expenses, property, some additional expenses related to utilities. It's limited on payroll, but it's mostly these other ancillary expenses. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Follow up?
No, okay. Follow up. Thank you.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for a second question. Questions to the commissioner. Look in your crystal ball for just a second. I'm curious to know what your time frame is on an update so I can follow up with you on the assessing the RPL, if you're going to have some wiggle room with the acceptance of PPP, maybe not being a disqualifier as it is now. I'm just curious, when do you think you'll have an answer for that? And I'm also curious what the timeline is for a new financial institution to come online through this RFP. What time frame are we looking at for another financial institution being eligible to assist? Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter. So I believe the RFP closes on this Friday, and we expect about a two-week process to review them, provide a notice of intent to award, and finalize the negotiations. I believe Alan Weissner can probably address that a little bit further for more specific deadlines. But our intent was to have the contract in place by the end of June so that we can start processing more applications in a quicker fashion. And we'd be happy to provide updates on that as well as the timeline with the getting clearer definition regarding our department's ability to be flexible within the confines of the law and the intent of the legislature. So I would ask maybe in 2 weeks, would you like to have an update, or would you prefer just we provide a written update to the committee where we can provide information in whichever form you would like?
Now, I guess this would be a good time to say that Co-Chair Foster and I will probably be discussing having an additional hearing on these, so we'll work with the department to set a date for that and maybe have some public testimony too.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick follow-up. I think there are some businesses out there that are a little discouraged or disappointed that they've taken the PPP because it hasn't benefited them as much as they had thought that it would at the time, and they may have, had they known there was something else coming that would be better suited to them, they would have chosen not to apply for the PPP. So I'm very keen to figure out what the solution is here for those businesses. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Or whomever is best situated to answer this, I guess I'm confused about why there needs to be further thought and clarification about the legality of extending benefits in one category where someone received them in the other. Of the RPL at page 2, the pertinent one, which is 2020-0251, reads that businesses that have secured an economic injury disaster loan, PPP loan, or other federal loan program monies, funding made available directly to small businesses, become ineligible or do not qualify for additional programs. And I guess, aren't we just at a place where we just need to fix that? Could that fix come into Juno, in your view, or through a new RPL that we could try to bless?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, this is Commissioner Anderson. That is, as we are looking at what we can do within the guidelines, I'm sure that is one of the items that the Department of Law will be looking at. But as I stated earlier, if we can find some flexibility through reviewing the intent behind this RPO approval process, we're looking to solve this problem, and we hear it from everyone as much as you are hearing it. It was disappointing, to say the least, that the 3P programs were not meeting what I feel was their intended goal, and people, I've heard the same stories, and requested, you know, $20,000 or $30,000 and received $2,000. So that's a that's a gap that occurred. I believe the federal SBA department is looking to expand the 3P program. I'm not sure about the economic injury one, but to increase the flexibility of that program, provide more forgiveness, and looking at adjusting timelines. So it's an ever-moving target, and we're looking to be able to have some flexibility as well and be able to address these concerns as they arrive, but honor the intent of the RPL process as well.
Okay. I know that everyone wants the same goal. I mean that. Everyone wants the same broad goal to help Alaska. But my understanding is that this language was put in not at the request or requirement of the federal government, but at administration's request. So rather than being critical about it, I just want to do everything I can to help fix it if it needs fixing. And I am at your beck and call with respect to that.
Any other questions? Then I have one additional question. Are you looking at a waterfall approach between your tranche one and tranche two as far as funds? Or are you going to keep them in their tranches until they're used?
Chair, this is Alan Weissner with ADA. Could you explain what you mean by a waterfall, please, for me to answer that?
So you have distinctly two different tranches, and I know you're and going out for your new RFP, and also we all know that there's a lot of work with the Department of Law and with Ledge Legal as far as making these funds more available. But what my interest is after a certain amount of time, if there's still funds in your first tranche, are you planning to then have those funds then go into the second tranche, or are you keeping them distinctly two different tranches?
To the chair, this is Alan Weissner. I can't tell you specifically because we're trying to leave some flexibility into it. One of the things that has certainly occurred in the process of establishing the program is that a lot of the underlying dynamics have changed on us as we've put the program in place. So this is one of the elements that we do want to have some flexibility in how we organize this best. As Commissioner Anderson had identified, there's some flexibility that is being sought in the way that we're applying the program. Once that is known, that's how we would define out how this new program operator would come into play most effectively. So it could be that it's organizing off of the same queue and that we're coordinating it on that basis. It could also be that we have a distinct applicant or a new applicant pool that can be managed by that operator. which I would say this, Madam Chair, is that whichever is the most viable way of expediting funds to Alaska small businesses is the one that we will implement. Thank you.
Thank you. I do appreciate that this is a moving target. When these funds first started being proposed from the Federal CARES Act, it was quite a bit different than what they're looking like now. And so I appreciate your efforts, and I appreciate everybody trying to keep as flexible as possible. And as I say, the waterfall approach is just one idea as far as flexibility. Are there any other questions? I think we have one more presentation.
Yes, Madam Chair, this is Sandra Moeller, Director of DCRA, and looking at slide 12, we put a slide together on the ARDER organizations, and as a reminder, the ARDERs are a state-designated organization to be used in this type of format to establish, implement activities such as the CARES Act as opposed to AML, which is a membership organization. So the ARDERs, we have 9 ARDERs, and I can list those out if you would like. We have the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation, Bering Strait Development Council, Copper Valley Development Association, Fairbanks North Star Borough Economic Development District, Kenai Peninsula Economic Development District, Northwest Arctic Borough, Prince William Sound Economic Development District, Southeast Conference, and Southwest Alaska Municipal Conference. So those are the 9 that we have been working with. The funds were set aside in the RPL to provide the ARDERs with the resources to assist small businesses in applying for COVID grants, not just the CARES grant programs. Some examples are providing technical assistance, marketing, providing education to small businesses. As ARDERs are required to submit a monthly report of activities of how the funds were used and what type of activity they've had, such as how many businesses, what type of assistance they provided. For that, the ARDERs are granted, receive a grant of $83,333, which is 750 divided by the 9. We set it up where they would, once the grant is completed with an authorizing resolution, they would receive $75,000 to get a quick start. The remaining $8,333 would be sent to the ARDERs after we receive the final monthly report. And that report we're expecting to be between December 30 and March 31st of 2021. And it would document how the activities would be used since the grant funds were first received. In addition, we are holding in weekly meetings with the ARDERs. We have one this afternoon and have had really good participation and good ideas coming out of that. As of actually this morning, we have now 4 completed grant applications, and we have those with the Kenai Peninsula, Southeast Conference, Southwest Alaska Municipal Conference, and this morning we received the Prince William Sound Economic Development District's grant, so they will be getting their funds as soon as we can process that in the next couple of days. We are working with all the other ARDERs, trying to get them to get their grants in and going. And even though they haven't necessarily gotten the grant in yet, they are continuing to do work and doing reach out and a lot of good things happening across the state and the regions. Some examples of the activities that they've been doing is, I know Capehead or Kenai is launching town hall meetings in Kenai, Homer, Seward, Seldovia, and with the borough over the next several weeks. They are also working with each of their communities to assess their needs, including the unincorporated communities like Hope and Cooper Landing. Southeast Conference is partnering with Spruce Roots to provide a virtual workshop this week. AEDC has postings on Facebook, as I believe other ARDERs are doing that, and letting businesses know to contact them. AEDC also distributed $1 million of municipal Municipality of Anchorage funds to small businesses, and we'll continue that process with additional funds. AEDC is also coordinating multiple community organizations that promote AK Care grants for businesses, and the SBDC's daily AK Care grant training session and grant application assistance services. The Fairbanks North Star Borough is preparing a local grant program. After the City of Fairbanks approves the creating the program using CARES Act funds, Swampsea is working to get funding information out to as many entities in the region as possible, which is a challenge for Southwest with the travel and distances that are needed. Copper Valley has assisted multiple businesses in applying for CARES Act. I'm sure this is not the full extent of all the activities that the Arters are doing for the small businesses, but I wanted to give a sample. And additionally, as of Monday, the following communities and regions have notified DCRA they will have some type of business relief, which will be set up from the community distributions. As an example, the Kenai will have all five of their municipalities that are incorporated will have some program set up in the next few weeks. AEDC again mentioned the Municipality of Anchorage has already distributed $1 million, and they're looking at funding that with additional funds. Fairbanks has set up a program, and North Pole is considering it. Southeast area, Juneau, Haines, and Skagway have set up business relief programs with their community distributions, and Swampsea, Kodiak, and Unalaska are working on the standards and application process for using community assistance funds as small business grants. And Kodiak will be the first municipality in the region to get the funds out, as they are aiming for a distribution of July 1st. And Unalaska is in the planning process and expects to have the plan to the council June 23rd. So again, that's the types of activities that the Arters are doing and where we are with working with the Arters. So, thank you.
Thank you. I think Representative Sullivan Leonard has a question for you.
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to know who is that handling our participation for the Patsy Borough. You've listed a group of 9 different Arters that are working across the state of Alaska, and unfortunately, our natural resources for conservation and development council is
Representative Sullivan Leonard, could you speak closer to your phone? We've got some interference and having trouble hearing you.
Oh, absolutely. Is this a little bit better?
Yeah, that's better. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you want me to repeat what I just said?
Yes, thank you.
Madam Chair, my question was such that in the past, MATSU had an Arter Council, the MATSU Resource Conservation and Development Council, and unfortunately that was defunded in 2016. So as the commissioner and, director has discussed the 9 different Arters across the state, who is handling MATSU's disbursement of funds, and is there a discussion maybe of resurrecting the MATSU Resource Conservation and Development Council?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Sullivan Leonard, this is Sandra Moeller with DCRA. It's a very good question, and I neglected to mention that the 9 Arters do represent 9 regions. There are a number of communities outside of that, including the MATSU, and we have been working with UAA and their Small Business Development Center, who has been working with MATSU. I believe earlier this week we just distributed funds to the MATSU Borough, and as far as the community funds on the small businesses, it's been going through the Small Business Development Center, and they have been extremely active and helpful with all communities, and I don't have a list from them yet on who they are working with, but I do know they were working with Haines and Skagway with the business relief funds, as well as the community. So I hope that answers your question, that the nine artists do their respective regions, and the remainder of the state is being worked on with the SBDC.
Follow-up for that, please, Madam Chair?
Follow-up?
Yes, and then my last question on that was, is there a discussion possibly on resurrecting our MAPSU Resource Conservation and Development Council?
Through the Chair, Representative Sullivan Leonard, the Sandra at DCRA again, I have not contacted them. They certainly would be able to resurrect. We've had that over the years. Regions have been an ardor, and then for one reason or another have not been an ardor. So that is something that we allow the local entities to choose to do that. So, again, I have not had any conversations directly with them, but would be happy to do so.
Thank you. And then just to clarify then, is the Small Business Administration Centers are working then in MATSU to assist the borough and the cities then to make sure we can get funds out to small businesses that are in need. Is that correct?
Through the Chair, Representative Sullivan Leonard, this is Sandra again with DCRA. I believe your question is, was it the SBD centers? Or you said the SBA centers, but I know that the SBDC has a variety of outreach, and I could not speak to whether the ones out in the valley in the MATSU were open or not, but we can follow up and ensure that that is a question that's answered.
Sure. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Wall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to understand this grant program with the ARDRs. It says three complete grant agreements received as of June 8th. So these grants are going to ARDRs, and that grant money is used by the ARDRs to help facilitate the dispersion of the other COVID federally funded monies that came into the communities. Are they a facilitating entity, and they're getting grant money specifically to do that? Is that, am I understanding that correctly?
Through the Chair, Representative Wolf, Sandra at PCRA again. Yes, they are receiving grants through CARE. It was one of the RPLs that was approved for the 752 ARDRs to help assist businesses apply for funds. And they, again, there is a specific start date, which was, I don't have the exact date, that the funds and activities would be eligible for repayment or use of those funds. I do know some of the regions are hiring additional consultants or staffing to be able to provide some of the outreach. There's some efforts on advertising, getting the word out and helping different businesses to be able to apply for both the AK CARES as well as the any other funds, so they could help them with a PPP loan if they chose that's what they wanted. I hope that answered your question.
Yes, thank you. And a follow-up, please, Madam Chair.
Follow-up?
Yes. So I'm looking at the at your slide, page 12, actually, and Fairbanks North Star Borough preparing a local grant program. Now, Anchorage has an economic development corp that's an ARDR. Fairbanks has the FEDCO, which is the Fairbanks Economic Development Corporation, but I've heard they're not even an ARDR, and that the ARDR resides within the mayor's office. So maybe that's why the borough is preparing a local grant program. So I'm assuming the borough is dispersing their federal funds themselves, but yet they still, and they also will get grant money to help them disperse, because their ARDR is in the borough itself, and FEDCO won't get anything. Is that correct?
Through the Chair and Representative Wool, the Fairbanks North Star Borough will receive the grant, and we are working with the designated person, which is in the mayor's office. I don't know what the FEDCO would or would not receive, but we are working grant with Fairbanks, North Starboro.
Okay. All right, thank you. Just when I found out that Fedco was not an ARDR and would not receive the grant for helping disperse funds, because I was initially going to direct people to Fedco if they had questions, but I guess it's all housed within the borough at this point. Is that correct? Sounds like it is.
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, that's correct.
Thank you.
Representative Laban.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I'm really at the point of making comments versus asking questions, but a response would be appreciated. One comment is regarding banks' participation with Credit Union One. The RFP has been sent out, and you're looking for feedback from the banks, and I can offer a little. When this was first viewed as a loan program, banks were hesitant to participate. I spoke to both the community banks and Fairbanks, and they viewed it as their statewide obligation would just overwhelm the organizations. They were still dealing with the SBA PPP loan program, and they were up to their necks in that program, and they just couldn't take on additional responsibility. So I encourage the state and ADA to look at local community banks and allow them to define their market area. In Fairbanks, it would probably be in the interior, and they would define that. And I think you would get a better chance of participation from local community banks if they're allowed to do that. And the second part of my comment is regarding eligibility for small businesses that already have received some assistance from SBA in the PPP or the Economic Disaster Relief Program. And I know you've heard this from several of us, but I encourage a quick and rapid action on your part to allow for eligibility in that group who received very modest funding. Again, to use that example of a $1,000 grant, doesn't hardly do anybody much good. And I think Representative Josephson offered our assistance if you need the legislature to take action, and I would be on board with that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Hearing none, thank you all today. Co-Chair Foster and I will discuss as far as having a follow-up hearing and what that would consist of. I appreciate the department for their presentations. As we all understand, this is a moving target, and flexibility is and nimbleness is the word for the day. I do know that the Department of Law and Ledge Finance are working hard to make these changes as quickly and as well as possible. So I guess to all, stay tuned. And with hearing no other questions or no other comments, this meeting is closed.
Your host is exiting the conference.